Good morning. Today's Thursday. Double check. It's the 14th of September. Joining us this morning, Humboldt County District Attorney Stacy Eads. Morning.
Good morning, Brian.
Make sure I write down 14 here because I put down the wrong one before. You've not been indoctrinated.
Oh, dear. A new book.
But they're very short. So that means that they're really easy, right?
I'm not going to agree.
All right. Well,
these are what we call leading questions, where you're trying to just drag me along with you. Oh, is that what it is?
Okay. What exactly? No. Okay. What exactly is a family circle? Interesting. You can just say pass, and I'll just read it.
Okay, or I could just sit here and stare at you in silence.
Yeah. Or you could say it's a cartoon strip.
I don't know what a family circle is, but I know how I apply it in terms of just my own life, but I'm sure I'm totally wrong. Otherwise, it probably wouldn't be in the book.
Yeah, or maybe the author is aware of what's going on. When the early Normans brought fire indoors, they built semicircular open fireplaces. To keep warm at night or when the air was cool, the family would sit in a semicircle opposite the one formed by the hearth, creating a complete circle, which they would then spend time telling stories or singing songs within, which they called the family circle. When neighbors were included, it became a circle of friends. That's it.
Yeah, well, that's nice, and I feel like it...
Nothing onerous on this one,
it
huh?
It probably could have been in even earlier times, you know, but I wouldn't know. So. That was a nice one.
Yeah, they're all not overly challenging. I had a thought earlier this week. How do you... 8.5 months? 9 months? You've been...
Since I've been in office.
Running the... Yeah, you moved over to the corner office. How do you know the office is doing a good job? What barometer do you use? What standards are you measured against? How do you know?
Well, we certainly have gotten some good feedback from community members. We've gotten good feedback from the courts. We've gotten good feedback from victims and folks that feel that they've been heard and that their positions have been pursued. In court by the deputy district attorneys. We've had a number of major cases that have gone to trial. One of my newest deputies, he's taken over 7 trials within the last year himself. So we're getting cases out that we can, and each one presents its own challenges. But in particular, considering the fact that just looking at the attorney staffing level alone, we're operating at about a little over 60% of what we should be operating at in terms of positions that are currently filled. And that's, assuming that everyone is able to come to work on those particular days. And so that's, obviously not the case for people, too. And so folks, have time off for vacation, training, sickness, family leave. So I think that the results that we're getting for the community have been really tremendous. And I'm extremely proud of the entire team. And that goes well beyond the attorneys, but the support staff that work hard, many of whom are working, talk about staffing levels, almost every support staff person is wearing at least 2 hats in terms of positions that they're covering. So we're making it happen, but it's not easy.
Is it sustainable?
I would say it's not sustainable in the long term. And I think that in terms of looking at, what is also reflective of success is that the staff are proud of the work they do. They want to serve the community. They're concerned about public safety. They want people to be held accountable, and they want people to be treated fair within the community. So they're putting their hearts into the work that they do. But that said, they're people too, and they need to have a break, and they need to have time, and they need to not feel like they have to stay after hours to finish their work. They need to go home and be with their families and have time for their personal lives. And in some instances, that's been really challenging. And no, that's not okay, and that's not sustainable.
Is the 40-hour work week a myth for the department?
Yes.
Even if fully staffed?
You know, I think moments in time that we've been fully staffed have been few, but we've been, you know, very understaffed. So that's somewhat different. But yes, folks that I would say historically wouldn't have needed to come in during their weekends to process files, ensure that the paperwork's where it needs to be, you know, that subpoenas get out and issued. That historically hasn't necessitated so much overtime and folks coming in, which, you know, if we look at it as a whole, having to pay overtime is also an additional, you know, cost for the county and, you know, for the office and working that into the budget. So we're grateful that people are willing to do that, but we certainly want to provide them some relief and have it. It's always going to be a challenging workplace. You know, we have a high workload, plenty of crime to address.
And
sadly,
I would imagine that it's pretty tempting to take stuff home, physically or not physically.
Well, you know, yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it's my hope that folks are able to not take things home, you know, physically, emotionally, mentally, because they do need to have that break, and that's part of being effective and efficient when you are on the job as well. So I certainly hope that people aren't, you know, staying up all hours and night, you know, worried. But again, you know, I've seen support staff working after hours, and they do care about the work that they're doing. So I hope Humboldt appreciates the fact that they've got some people really working hard for them.
You see it changing in the next little bit?
You know, we recently we're going to bring on a few new support staff folks. The hiring process is taking much longer than it had historically, but we're glad to be bringing in some new people.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about chicken of the sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County DA Stacy Eads. Stacy, as we went to the break, you were talking a little bit about something that was exciting, I know, and you were gaining momentum and we had to take the break. I didn't write it down, though. We talked about the sustainability and how long things can occur, and do you remember what it was?
Well, you know, you were, I think, initially just asking, how do we know that we're doing a good job? And then
right,
it just sort of evolved into that the people within the office are working hard. And I think you were inquiring about whether staff tend to take things home. And it really, it depends on the role within the office. So I think if we're talking about emotionally, mentally, I think everyone probably to a certain degree takes it home. And I hope that what they take home is a sense of pride in what they're doing. The attorneys, I can say they definitely do not work a typical just 9-to-5 type job. They are in the office very early morning hours, sometimes in very late hours, you know, oftentimes during the weekend, almost always during the weekend. If an attorney's in trial, they are in trial, and it's all they're really doing, and it kind of requires a bit of tunnel vision and a lot of, you know, sacrifice within their personal lives, and a sacrifice that, you know, their families also make. So yeah, they absolutely do take it home, and this is you know, one of the challenges of the job.
Do other counties, the larger counties that have got multitudes of people in their departments, are they in some respect similar in the fact of the workload and everything, or because they're so large they can delineate into areas of specialty, or they just have enough staff hours where they're able to avoid some of those potential areas or triggers for burnout?
So I think that over the years, just sort of a recognition of the importance of, you know, wellness and self-care, and the impact that the nature of the work that we do and the things that that we're exposed to and the vicarious trauma, I think there's been a greater recognition of that within the field, you know, across the board for district attorneys and their staff. But, you know, one of the things about working in a small to medium-sized office is that we really have to be generalists. We don't have the units and the, I'll go ahead and say, bit of a luxury to be able to specialize in, you know, one type of prosecution to the extent that larger counties may be able to do. So, you know, larger counties have, you know, a number of different task force. They might have... you know, I've handled a number of sexually violent predator proceedings and trials, and those are, you know, somewhat complex litigation. It's it's quasi criminal civil proceedings, but they certainly come through our office, but and like many things, kind of in waves. But we certainly don't have a unit like LA County does, you know, that just exclusively addresses those types of cases and are able to really delve into that and have a number of attorneys that's their focus area and their expertise. So, but, you know, I think that in a way makes us stronger because we're more versatile and we can take anything on. And so.
What about the itty bitty counties? Do they even? I mean, they must have a district attorney, because aren't you a constitutional office?
Yeah. So they have district attorneys, but it could be an office with just two. So the district attorney and the other attorney, you know. And so I'm thinking back to more recent conferences and trainings, and it was interesting just to be in little work groups with folks that were from the larger counties and then the smaller counties. And I think, you know, there was one topic where we were discussing, you know, what sort of programs are in place to keep the morale going, and just looking at what a larger Southern California county was able to do for their employees and the programs that they had going, and versus a much smaller county where they were, you know, they have a holiday party, you know, that was, but really they're working and they're
bringing a sandwich every once in a while.
That's their focus, getting the work done, you know? And so, you know, like everything, you have to have a balance, and I do, you know, have, it's a primary concern of mine, a priority of mine, to ensure that, that there's a good morale within the workplace, and that folks do feel supported, you know, on within the district attorney's office. And we do take things on from the community, and sometimes folks, you know, might kind of cross the line, and things can sometimes impact personal lives of our attorneys. And that's, you know, one of the challenges that I don't know that the public fully understands, that, you know, we are exposed in a way that others might not be, and so
because of the visibility of the individuals,
visibility, and not everyone is happy with the outcome perhaps of their case. And so, you know, there have been incidences, not terribly frequently, but where you know, through social media or something along those lines, folks might cross a line in terms of how they impact an individual deputy's personal life, and that's a strain, but you know, it's part of the sacrifice. But yeah,
it's 8:30.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Stacey Eads, Humboldt County District Attorney. Stacey, earlier you'd said morale and support at the same time about the department. I see those as two separate things entirely. How do you maintain the support when you're dealing with the financial realities and then work with morale at the same time? Either to keep it up or at least not to let it go through the floor?
Well, I don't know exactly what the context was in terms of that, but you know, how I'm looking at it is morale is directly impacted by the level of support. So I have an obligation, a duty, a desire to ensure that the staff, you know, at the district attorney's office is well supported in terms of what they need to do in getting things done. So having proper equipment and resources and, fellow support staff folks, that's part of the support. And there's also, you know, kind of the emotional support and the recognition that the work that we do is challenging work. And we're oftentimes helping people that are going through extremely difficult times in their lives, if not the most difficult time of their lives. And that in and of itself is challenging as well, and sort of navigating that for every individual situation and providing the assistance to people that we can provide. And, recognizing appropriate boundaries and that we can't fix the world, you know, all in one swoop, but we can do the best we can. And also, you know, I think also looking at we have to prioritize, you know, and so where do we put most of our resources, and what particular issues or challenges can we, perhaps put on hold for the moment to ensure that whatever that might be a little more urgent matter is properly addressed. So a lot of prioritization and recognition that we all have our limits, and we can do the best we can, and just try to keep it as positive and real as we can.
One of the challenges, I think, for a lot of us outside looking in would be how to keep things departmentalized or contained. Let's say you've got an attorney and they're dealing with three different cases that they're working. I don't know if that's really a high number or really a low number based on what your guys' reality is, but let's go with the example. Just breathe. when you're in the courtroom dealing with one and you get an idea for the other, how do you keep the focus where it needs to be? Is that a learned? Is that experience? Is that training? Is that innate? Where does that come from?
Oh, gosh, I would probably say it's all the above. But yes, we certainly have to multitask. And part of being an effective litigator in the courtroom does involve the ability to go quickly from one issue to the next. We have to, you know, have a understanding and knowledge of, you know, every case that we're appearing on. And yeah, so you read my face when you said three cases. It's like I can't imagine the moment in time that any of us have ever had, you know, just three cases, maybe the first 10 minutes that we worked at the job.
What is the range?
Well, it depends on your particular assignment, but you know, you could have, if you're working, so let's say the child abuse and sexual assault cases, you might have, 30 that are actively open and ongoing. That's relatively low compared to what, say, a misdemeanor attorney might have, where they're really, you know, have hundreds of cases that are going, you know, from the point of, you know, filing and review and pretrials, hearings, sentencings, restitution hearings. And then, of course, you know, cases, you know, continue to have a life, you know, beyond the conviction. And that's very, very true today. And there's lots of, reconsiderations of, is the sentence that happened a number of years back, is that a fair sentence? Is that something that would happen today? Has the individual who was sentenced, perhaps should there be some degree of reconsideration due to mitigating, factors or rehabilitative efforts on the individual's part? So our cases go on for years and years.
Is there a research team, I guess? I'm thinking, if you've got your pile of cases, whatever that number might happen to be, that's where your focus is, rather than monitoring something from a couple years ago. Who does that monitoring part? Is that part of the job of the person who's also actively researching and appearing in court?
Well, there are, in terms of the monitoring of past cases, that's not necessarily something that we, individually keep some sort of, team looking at those cases, but there are structures in place, so for example, if someone is sentenced to state prison with the opportunity for parole, then, there's a degree of oversight within that. So when the individual might come up for the parole board hearing, we have always, almost always appear for those parole board hearings and provide input to the board regarding our position as to whether the individual is appropriate for parole or not. We'll also be assisting the victims and family members of the crimes that had occurred perhaps, 10, 15, 20 years ago, ensure that their voices are heard by the board as well. So that's kind of just one example of how there's this ongoing review at times. There's also the appellate process that sometimes gives us the opportunity to take another look at a case. And then there's also more relatively recent legislation that allows prosecutors to look at prior sentences. So our office is part of a pilot program working with a nonprofit organization called For the People, where we have been looking at our state prison population, so individuals that were committed to state prison out of our county, and who is in state prison, and whether there are individuals there that perhaps should be afforded an opportunity to have their sentences revisited and modified to some extent. And so that's
tougher or to make less?
To modify them, typically it can't be tougher. That wouldn't be lawful. But it could be to make it less. So maybe there are special circumstances that you know, are no longer applicable under current state of law, or but most significantly, is this an individual who has served a significant amount of time, and looking at their underlying criminal conduct and their rehabilitative efforts while incarcerated, is this an individual who may be an appropriate candidate for a lessened sentence and or potential, you know, release back into the community? So that's been a process that we've been engaged in for some time. We've had the opportunity to look pretty closely at our prison population, and frankly, you know, what we've come to learn is that over the years, the Humboldt County has been very gracious in terms of giving folks opportunities and not just quickly sending people to state prison. And so we don't have a number of folks that really fall within the obvious candidates of maybe they weren't given a, you know, a fair sentence. So, you know, other counties may have used the three strikes law a little more heavy-handedly than our county has over the years. And so I look at that as, you know, something that our county should be very proud of. But, you know, at the same time, I do have some folks that we're getting additional information on, and I'll take a good hard look at their situations and definitely give a lot of consideration to the victims if they're still with us and or their family members, and you know, determining whether we might give someone an opportunity to be released earlier than they would otherwise.
Does three strikes still exist?
Yes.
KINS News and Information Time, it's 8:45.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS News and Information Time. It's 8:49. We're back talking shop this morning with Humboldt County District Attorney Stacy Eads. Do you have a lot of meetings that are facilitated by Zoom that used to be in person?
You know, I have a few that are Zoom meetings, and then a few that are the hybrid. Personally, I've been trying to encourage as many in-person meetings as possible. I do think that there's a different element that comes with in-person meetings. I guess just kind of a more human element. But at the same time, Zoom can be an amazing tool, and it's afforded us the ability to have face-to-face interactions with family members who might, you know, live out of state or out of town. And I think that's tremendous. That's much more, you know, valuable than, say, just a phone call. There's something about people being able to see, you know, the face and the expressions of the individual who, you know, they're to some degree entrusting their loved one's, you know, case with. And so I think Zoom certainly has its benefits. But
is it recognized in the courtroom?
You know, they're still using Zoom for some, and it changes, and I'm not exactly sure when it's always allowed, but they do allow it for a number of misdemeanor appearances. Sometimes Zoom is allowed for defendants that, you know, live out of the area. And also, sometimes Zoom is allowed for testimony by experts who might be out of the area and otherwise difficult to schedule. It can be a bit of an undertaking to travel to Humboldt County from some other locations. That can consume an additional day on the front end and another day on the back end of someone coming to testify in court. So if the parties agree and the court so allows, then sometimes that's an option too. So again, that can be a really great tool for us.
I would think that there's probably some strategy in there about yes, no, or with Zooms?
Well, yeah, and you know, if we're talking about individual testifying via Zoom, I think the ideal is certainly to have the individual there present in court. In particular, if it's a jury trial, for example, where one of the you know, duties, jobs of the jurors is to assess credibility of the individual that's, you know, testifying. And also the defendant has a right to confront the witnesses, you know, brought against them. So
I was wondering, does that qualify as being able to see your accuser or confront people if it's in that fashion?
Well, if everyone agrees it does, then it can. But otherwise, I think it's potentially there could be an issue with that. And, you know, so with certain, so if you take a child victim, for example, there are statutory mechanisms where if the court makes certain findings, we could have the child testify. You know, I think it's like in the code, I think it's closed circuit TV or something along those lines, but long before Zoom. But yeah, there have to be very particular findings to have that happen. So certainly I think the law contemplates that the witnesses would be there in person.
And everybody on board with it.
Great.
See, I'm listening, sort of, kind of. Oh, boy. Thanks for coming by. Hopefully this wasn't too arduous this morning.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you so much,
yeah,
Brian.
Right. See everybody tomorrow.